Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. I'm going to be talking about the doses administered effort that we conducted in the early part of the H1N1 response. And hopefully I can run this computer. Okay, so we're going to give you a little background and then present the results of the doses administered event and then share some lessons learned and best practices. Okay, so why did we even care about doses administered for the H1N1 event? As you're probably all aware, the gold standard for coverage is the BRFSS and NIS, which we employ on an annual basis for the normal influenza season when vaccine is in very high volume. During the early stages of the H1N1 campaign, vaccine volume was not high enough for these systems to be statistically significant until approximately week 8. So part of our pandemic plan had always been to employ the doses administered in the early stages so we'd have an understanding of how well we were doing, how well we were reaching the target populations, etc. So doses administered data, which was collected nationally across the country and the islands, was used in combination with distribution figures to assess coverage and help assure that the vaccine was reaching targeted groups during those initial 8 weeks. We did understand that and expect that distribution data would be high and that doses administered data would be low, and that it would be somewhere in between. In addition, the doses administered data was provided a check and balance for identifying vaccine distribution or implementation issues so that we could ensure that some of those things, you know, that we could be proactive and remove any barriers early on. So the Countermeasure and Response Administration was the system that we use, the tool that we use to collect this information. And just a very brief background, CRA, as we refer to it, has its genesis in the pre-event vaccination system, PVS, where we collected doses administered information on smallpox vaccination. Considerably lower volume, 40,000 versus 40 million doses distributed, and we'll talk about the percentage of that was actually tracked through this system. CRA supports mass tracking during an event, and the system has evolved over time to support the tracking of any countermeasure, any event, medical interventions as well as non-medical interventions. And probably in 2006, 2007, we placed considerable emphasis on updating it to support doses administered for pandemic influenza, and we also exercised it in 2007-2008 to ensure that states knew how to use it. CRA was stood up to track and monitor doses administered during those initial weeks of H1N1. Who knew when we set the thing up that we were really actually going to be using it so soon? One of the critical pieces to collecting this information is to leverage systems that are already out there. It was never expected that everybody would use this system other than to provide the data in summary form. However, we had multiple options for how this could be used. First, and this is probably about a half, 26 users used option one, which is data exchange, which is to collect the information locally in the immunization registry and then report up to CDC using multiple methods. Option two is just direct web entry aggregate or detail. And then the third is if you don't have the ability to collect information locally in a registry or via paper or whatever the reason, we have the individual level data entry. And so you can see the distribution, 26 in the registry, 35, many opted to go with the direct web entry, and then one user used it for the detail. So the guidelines for the doses administered were that each project area was responsible for sending data to CRA for each reporting area using one of those three methods. And they were to aggregate the information by the age group and dose number for all the clinics within that jurisdiction. The reporting was based on the MMWR week, Sunday to Saturday, and we expected reporting by 11:59 of the respective time zone on Tuesdays, so that we could then summarize and report out to the Vaccine Task Force as well as the CDC leadership on the later in that week. So here are the high-level results. We stood the system up for the first 8 weeks of the vaccine campaign with the expectation we would no longer need to use it once about 40 million doses had been distributed, and we were confident that BRFSS and NIS were beginning to be statistically significant. The total doses administered for that period were about 14.7 million doses, and we did continue to collect information after the period that we were expecting weekly reports. So this is accurate as of I believe the 1st of January. The reporting status, 35% of the doses administered, 35% of the doses shipped were reported. 35% of those reached the children ages 5 to 18, which was an expectation. And over 83% of the vaccine reported was for persons under 65, which is, again, something that was at least earlier in the campaign, was the focal point, was the younger ages. On average, there was a lag time, about 2 to 4 weeks for receiving and fully updating counts. And so that's one of the biggest challenges that we'll talk about and lessons learned is implementing a system of this magnitude is the issues with lag time. So this gives you an idea of kind of the distribution of the doses administered and where, you know, we might want to tease out best practices, but this is the doses administered by population across the nation. And then this gives you an idea of the age distribution of those doses administered. Again, we were reaching the appropriate populations that we had expected to, and this is as of January, because again, we allowed states to continue to report to make sure they had gotten all of the information in. And then this will just give you an idea of the timeliness that, you know, of course, week one, October 3rd, we had one reporting. And so, there was a bit of a, it took a bit to get things up and running. By week two, we had 36. And that probably reflected more likely the lack of vaccine at that point rather than lack of participation. And then, of course, we went up to pretty solid participation throughout. And this is kind of a very interesting slide. One of the things that's challenging with this is, the confidence in the data and how how it really relates to, because of the lag, how it really relates to, you know, what we would consider the gold standard. And so at week 8, we did a couple of things to look at the data. We would expect on a national basis that the data would be low. However, we did pull out what we call robust project areas that were consistently reported data, doses administered above the national average. And we found that when we matched that with the data from the MMWR as reported through BRFSS, that we were very much on target. So one of the takeaways from that was that perhaps in the future, until we have better capabilities across the board, across all of the states, that perhaps a way to do doses administered would be to have a more focused group that may have more solid capabilities to do this until we across the nation can do this consistently. And I think there's been some, you know, in the couple of days here at the plenary sessions, some emphasis on how important this information would be, and to be able to even collect it on a consistent basis, sustained basis, as opposed to relying on statistics. So just some related to some of the challenges is that we had many different ways of transferring data and aggregating data. So option one users, remember those are the registry folks. They had the majority were doing pipe delimited. For option two users, we had a range of how they aggregated their data to enter it in. IIS in combination with other methods was the biggest percentage. Paper only was second. So there's a lot of, a takeaway here is there's a lot of work to be done over time to increase automation to support something of this nature. We also wanted to know, of course, once we had stopped the doses administered effort, though we continued to accept information to complete the data set, we did refocus on lessons learned and did some feedback questionnaires as well as after action conference calls and got very good feedback results. So just to give you an idea, you know, from the, you know, how'd we do experience, we did get very good marks in terms of, you know, how the effort was managed, communications, updates, the website, et cetera. You know, one of the big things that we found with our exercises over time is that there was often a disconnect between the preparedness and the immunization area. And one of the things we wanted to know is, you know, had this effort improved that communication? And we actually found that that the majority said yes, which was a very positive thing. In the past, one didn't know what the other was doing. We also conducted an after-action review call to get feedback. Probably one of the biggest things that was challenging to folks was that during the exercises in 2007-2008, you know, we were focused on the H5N1 priority groups. We were very complex, and many people had adjusted their systems to support that. And of course, as you all know, in some ways, very fortunately, we had a much more basic priority group, but that was inconsistent with what we had prepared for. We did get feedback that CRA was easy to use and that the support was good, communication was good, and that it was important to continue to have, to keep fresh, to keep up to date on functionality, et cetera. Another area that we focused in on to assist was to provide project area feedback. And I will finish up. So what were some of the successes and challenges? Successes, we had nearly, not quite, but nearly 100% weekly reporting from all project areas, which is really pretty impressive. Let's see, it was one of few data sources on how the vaccine campaign was progressing early on in the first 8 weeks. And as I mentioned earlier, it was a good data check for other H1N activities, particularly in the implementation area, that could help us with helping to remove barriers early on. Some of the challenges, I think probably one of the biggest thing is that we don't do this very often. This is a nascent data source. And so people are very confident in the gold standard and probably less so with this. And so there needs to get to be a comfort level. Of course, the provider timeliness and reporting accuracy was an issue. And part of that is just the operational logistics at the project area level. And then finally, of course, we always have technical and programmatic issues. The big one always is the digital certificate and some of the things that were going on at the time. We needed to upgrade the SDN, and of course, that affected everything. So those were some of the challenges. So lessons learned. One of the very biggest things I have to say is, it's a good thing that we had a system and standard practices already set up and exercised as part of our pandemic influenza preparedness. What we were able to do was literally take the same processes that we did for the exercises and just refocus it. In fact, we were starting out to have a 2009-2010 exercise, and we just changed gears and went into the H1N1 gear. So that was extremely useful and underscores the importance of preparedness and keeping fresh on this. It's difficult to get timely and complete reporting nationwide, given the varying capabilities across states. So in the future, until we have capabilities more consistent across the board, we might look to robust project areas to provide this data. Certainly, there's room for improvement in automation at the state and local levels. We did find that for this effort, people came together. We had excellent collaboration across the board, federal, state, and local, to pull this off. We had very consistent and agreed upon processes between the immunization and preparedness programs, that those need to be in place in the future. Just real quick plans. We did meet with folks this week, and there is actually an interest in continuing to keep fresh on this and to exercise this, so we may revisit the idea of doing something along those lines, but we will continue to look at supplemental fundings to increase this capability, provide educational opportunities, and continue to evaluate. There's so much to evaluate this effort. And I know we're holding questions until the end.